Well, it has been overall a very positive summer for dairy farmers. And I think it's fair to say that July got off to a particularly bright start because there was real relief, dare I even say it, a bit of celebration, when the latest figures from the Environmental Protection Agency came out, which showed that nitrogen levels in our rivers are falling. In fact, there's been a 10% drop right across the country, including in those hotspots in the south and the southeast where nutrient pollution is such an issue. But there's always a but. That optimism didn't get much time to settle because just days later, some fresh news landed. The Irish government will now have to prove to a very high scientific standard that allowing farmers to operate under derogation won't harm our 600 or so protected nature sites. And these include rivers, bogs, sand dunes and estuaries. Well, up to now, the message to the 5% or so of farmers who are in derogation was fairly straightforward and clear. If you reduce water pollution, the derogation would be safe. But now it is about much more than just water. It is about wildlife, habitats, biodiversity, a much bigger environmental picture. Well, the reaction from the sector during the week, it's fair to say, was one of absolute shock. The Irish Creamery Milk Suppliers Association said it could be the straw that breaks the back of Irish dairy. The Irish Farmers Journal labelled it as a new low. And the Irish Farmers Association, well, they've described the situation as logistically mind-boggling. Well, Ireland is now the only country in the EU still seeking to farm under this special derogation that permits higher nutrient use than standard rules apply. And the current derogation runs out this December. And for any business owner, being told that things on the one hand are fine and then suddenly might radically change within a few months is extremely difficult. Farmers are currently making their winter feed. They're planning for next year. So I suppose the big question for them is, where does all of this leave them? Well, Shane O'Loughlin farms 195 cows under derogation in Monasterevin in Kildare. So I dropped down to him during the week and asked him first for his reaction to the news.
Confusion, a bit of frustration, anxiety. You know, you're sort of going, Jenny, where am I now, or where do I sit with it? And then, like, the information, I suppose, is slow enough coming out to farmers too, that you hear it on the news, what's going on, but you're not sure. I'm in the Barrow catchment area. You know, there's special areas conservation. I'm not one of them, but yet, you know, all tributaries lead to them. And where do I fit in that? And it's very worrying. And I suppose, look, like, there's farmers around here I know well have invested a lot in getting their slurry storage up to scratch, low slurry spreading equipment, all that sort of thing, doing everything they can for the water quality and to stay within the nitrates guidelines. And now they're sort of going, well, where am I now? There's a lot of money invested. We're probably not great savers that we spend. We like to keep improving. And I think for every €5 we receive, there's €4 generated locally. If the derogation is cut and I have 30 less cows, and say if that's €30,000, you know, 80% of that is money that I won't be spending locally that I would be now, you know, so it's a knock-on effect everywhere. That stream goes on in towards Monasterevin and it joins the Barrow in there, but it's like it'd be 4 to 5 miles into Monasterevin, but it's all sort of little tribute. To say it's like the M50 is the Barrow. And it's all little byroads and small roads that lead into that, you
and
know.
You're so one of them. You know. And this potentially could be the reason why you are brought in under an assessment, because what is happening here on the farm is going to affect the Barrow, which is a special area of conservation.
Yeah. And that's it. Look, you know, we've fenced off from livestock. We spread the right distance away from it, so we hope we've any of the. Like, there's ASAP advisors come out from Chagas, there's the EIP water advisors come from Tirlan, and all them so far are happy what we're doing and the measures we're taking, and we've undertaken through the EIP to put more protocols in place, like a yard brush for cleaning the yard, bung the drains where you sort of slow the passage of water going through drains. That's all, but all them are happy with what we're doing, and yeah, we are meeting our targets.
If you don't mind me asking, are you carrying debts because of expansion on this farm?
There would be debts. You know, sure, every farm is. Dad would have been caught back in the 80s when the interest rates rose. So I'd always be cautious on it. But I would have borrowings here on the farm. You could be anywhere from, you know, a lowly borrowed maybe 500 to 1,000 per cow. There could be lads that would be 4,000 to 5,000 a cow. So like if you have 100 cows, that's 500,000 of debt that you're taking on. The frustration among farmers is, it's not that we're against doing anything, but it's just to have cows like these producing the milk and the butter, cheese, all that we do in this, like it is a sustainable and it's environmentally friendly within the nitrates derogation, within them rules that we have to abide to, you know. Like we have a lot more work to do. Every farm is getting involved in this now and trying, and you're hoping all these effects will say in 5 or 6 years' time that we'll have another 10% reduction or whatever, you know. I'm not sure, you know.
I'm getting such a sense from you, Shane, that you feel very positive about the impacts that you've had over the last few years, yeah, the changes that you've implemented on the farm. You've been involved in these European innovation partnerships about pollinators and about water. It feels like it's working. Is it too little, too late? Should all of this have happened 10, 15 years ago as expansion happened? And then all of you wouldn't be in this essential panic, which is the derogation might be gone this winter. And you have to face a pretty stressful situation.
Farmers are great for you meet the challenge you get and you drive on, sort of. I could see, like, the general public, you know, can see at that point, if you visit too little too late. I think no, and I think farmers are there. We're engaging with this. I'm proud of what we're doing in this farm, and it's just I'm hoping that Minister Hayden will be able to get us the time just to show the EU what we can do. You know, that sort of way. If we can't produce it here, where's it produced? If I produce less milk here on the farm here and all the farmers do the same, like, that's going to drive the cost of food for the consumer up. You know, the food inflation is already high. So if we can get things right and keep going the way we're going, it's a win for us, but it's a win for the farmers and local economy. And sure, I admit, look, every farm has work to do, and we've more we can be doing. It's just, I suppose, the big frustration at the minute is we don't know what's coming, and it's sort of, there's something brought in without, like, the first we read about, I suppose, was in the, it was on the news the other morning, you know, and that's the first engagement we got with it. Like, all the farmers in my area, like, I had fellas ringing yesterday, and, like, there was just one fella, he's after taking on another farm beside him, he's after buying a bit of land, and he's hoping his nephew will come into a partnership with him. But now, if this comes in, he's going to have to go down in cow numbers, his nephew won't have a job, and it's just, it, like, that's the real worry with it.
If your derogation goes and you have to drop 30 cows, which is in and around 30,000 a year, how are you going to manage, and what will change on this farm?
If we're back 30 cows, you know, the question is, can you afford the labour on the farm? And that's what lads, like, that's what, you know, other farmers are asking as well. Lads, they're not going to go take more land. What they're going to do is they're either going to cut the numbers or exit. It's that serious, you know. Come on, girls, come on, come on.
Cows are just walking by us down to the field after milking.
The DPA report came out there last week. I think it said nitrogen levels were back 10% in the rivers. So, like, we're doing a lot of work where, like, I was on a walk there last week down in Seamus Brennan's in Ballyragget, and there was 450 farmers came, and there was people from the EPA, from the department, and they're showing us, you know, what we should be doing, what we have been doing, improvements that we've made, but also improvements we can make. And I come out with that, I come home, and I'm so positive and encouraged that we're all engaging. We're trying to protect the biodiversity on the farm anyway, and we're trying to improve the water quality as best we can.
When you look back on the way in which farmers were advised to expand, yeah, in the dairy sector, do you think that you were given the best advice?
The information we were given at the time was, I suppose, it was the information they were coming from Chagas and Moor Park. And like, I remember I joined a group, and it could be 2014, 2015. One of the fellas that came out, walked the farm, he wanted me to cut all the hedgerows to dry out the land. And I remember Dad at the time, Dad said, "Ginny, no way." And we never did. And, like, you look, the hedgerows are lovely, and they're lovely to look at, and the amount of biodiversity in those hedgerows.
How are you able to plan for this coming winter? So all the time you're thinking, I mean, you're getting the silage in for the winter, you're thinking about the numbers for next year, and in the middle of this, you're hit with the news about the Habitats Directive and appropriate assessments that may come your way. I'm just wondering how that does or doesn't allow you to plan.
At the minute, we're in the middle of the breeding season. We are gearing up to milk the same amount of cows here next year. We have enough silage to feed all the stock we have at the minute over the winter. But if it comes a case in December that we don't hold on to the irrigation, then I've too much silage. I, the cows I'll have to sell. But then, you know, I'm just hoping it won't come to that, you know. You know, water quality, if we, you know, do, you know, all these things they're asking us to do, that, you know, the water quality will improve, which it is improving, and then maybe you'll be able to hold on to it again. Farming, it's a great way of life. That's another thing you sometimes forget, that it's not, I've never miss a football match or a kids, you know, a parent teach me, that's a great thing, school pickups, all that, you're your own boss. So there's so much in that that I'd encourage any young person to come back to farming, that, you know, it is a great way of life.
Shane O'Loughlin there in Kildare. He's facing real stress of what's ahead, but undoubtedly one of the happiest farmers, I should say, that I've ever met. And one measure that he took recently that when we stood in the field was very visible. He left thistles to grow in the field, a kind of simple measure, and it was full of purple flowers at this time of year, and it was covered in bumblebees and butterflies. So small measures are having real impacts. Well, I mentioned earlier about the 10% reduction in nitrogen levels in rivers in Ireland. We asked the Environmental Protection Agency to explain the reasons for this, and they told us that it was down to two things, the weather and farm practice, but that disentangling the effects of the two is challenging, they said, adding that there is currently no evidence available that the reduction is down to actions on derogation farms, but that it is clear that there's a lot of positive action being taken by many farmers. Now, and it's Saturday morning, but the legal side of this can get a bit tricky. But at the heart of it is an important court case from a few years back. The Dutch government was taken to the European Court of Justice because they weren't doing enough to protect special nature reserves from nitrogen pollution. And the court made a very significant ruling. They said that any individual project that might add nitrogen, and they considered grazing cattle or spreading fertilizer as an individual project, then that has to be carefully checked before it is allowed to go ahead. If it's near protected areas, a broad-based plan, the kind that the Irish government has been using to allow farmers to operate under derogation, isn't, in this case fines, enough. And if a protected site already has too many nutrients, then anything that adds even more could cause real damage. Well, this check that has to happen is called an appropriate assessment. And I suspect it's a term that we're going to be hearing quite a bit of over the next while, whether we like it or not. So we thought we'd find someone who knows a lot about the law to explain it. Alice Whittaker is one of Ireland's leading lawyers in the area of environment and energy. Earlier, I spoke with her and I began by asking her to explain what an appropriate assessment is.
So appropriate assessment is a process that is one part of a whole suite of measures under the Habitats Directive to try to protect these sites. So it's a process that applies when we are making plans or proposing projects or carrying out activities that involve interventions in the natural environment. And the idea is that before consenting to or allowing these things to happen, we look to see whether they could have a significant effect on one of these protected sites. If an effect is likely, there is a need before granting consent for that project to subject it to an appropriate assessment. And that is a scientific assessment. So you're looking at what the site is protected for. So if it's protected for birds, the impact it might have on their sources of food, or if it's a type of plant, you're looking at things like air pollution and whether that could cause the deterioration in that type of plant life.
How does an appropriate assessment work in real time?
In real time.
If I had a plan or a project and I'm told you have to do an appropriate assessment, what exactly does that mean?
They need to have somebody who is specialist or qualified normally in ecology. They need to be given scientific information about the state of the environment currently and what the pressures are on the habitat or species that are present and what the actual proposal is. So, you know, what chemicals are going to be used or what construction methods are going to be used. And then they look at that and think, OK, well, to what extent could that have an adverse effect on that habitat or species? And then if you can attach conditions that minimise that adverse effect so that it's not going to be particularly adverse, it's okay, well, then the consent can be granted. But if the effect...
There is this line in it, an activity can only proceed if there is no reasonable scientific doubt as to the absence of adverse effects on the integrity of the site. That puts the fear of God into people, doesn't it?
It's almost like a criminal standard of proof. So it is a reasonable doubt. There has to be some scientific basis to the doubt, but effectively it is an obligation to exclude all reasonable doubt. So you have to really go to the nth degree to prove that there won't be an adverse effect, and you can't sort of guess. My understanding is that the European Commission has indicated to Ireland that it needs to demonstrate that its plan will be able to show that at an individual farm level there isn't going to be an adverse effect on European sites. And that's not something you can do without having information about each landholding.
So is it your understanding that what the Commission is saying to Ireland is every farm that applies for a derogation this winter, because the derogation is up at the end of this year, they have to carry out an appropriate assessment to show that that derogation will not negatively impact nearby legally protected habitats, be they rivers like the River Barrow, a raised bog in the Midlands, whatever?
It doesn't have to be necessarily each individual farmland, but it might have to be groups of farms in specific areas. So maybe farms that have the same characteristics in terms of feeding into the same river courses, the same catchment area, it could be possible to do it on a more grouped or collective basis, but not on a national basis and probably not even on a regional basis. You would have to look at where could the impacts come from in terms of the European site. So if a site is, for example, an estuary, you'd be looking at everything upstream of the estuary, and it would be necessary to look at those impacts from the perspective of that pathway between the farms and the estuary. In the context, for example, of aquaculture, this was done before by the Marine Institute and the department on a bay by bay basis, but that was a much more discrete area, and where you were really looking at impacts on fish and birds. Whereas here you're talking about a much more complex network. So it will be a very difficult job, and it really depends on how small the subcatchments are.
We've been building up nitrates in our rivers, lakes and estuaries for years. Do you think that we are already at a kind of tipping point, ecologically speaking? So if you're looking at the EPA data, the catchments in the south and the southeast of the country, where nearly all the derogated farms are, these catchments are maxed out.
Yes, so that is an issue, because one of the things you have to look at in an appropriate assessment is not just the impact of the particular project or activity on its own. You also have to look at it cumulatively with things that have happened before and things that might happen in the future. So traffic and pollution, for example, causing air pollution, sludge spreading from wastewater treatment or anaerobic digestion. There's a lot of pressures on these European sites, and you need to look at the, you know, the addition of farming emissions along with all sorts of other emissions and look at what the key contributors are. So it is a complex process.
How likely is it then in the south and the southeast that any of these appropriate assessments will get approved?
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult to prove unless you can show that there are low, very low or no discharges into waters. And I don't know how technically feasible that is. I know there's lots of schemes around riparian planting, you know, forestry, you know, native planting along rivers, creating ecological corridors. There are measures that can be done to improve things, and it's just whether those are enough to get to scientific certainty as to the absence of adverse effects. That's the challenge.
For farmers in the south and the southeast, this is potentially incredibly serious. This is potentially for them the end of the derogation in all but name.
That seems a very real prospect, yes. So if we were best in class, you might say a special case might be merited, that there were particular features of Ireland that meant that we were performing really well under other metrics. But I don't think anyone can say that. So we have historically been very bad at complying with EU law, very bad at bringing EU laws properly into our own domestic regime, whether that relates to wastewater treatment or, you know, waste facilities, even how we handle water and water usage and conservation. We're not very responsible. And I think we have that reputation amongst our EU member states as well as being a bit lax when it comes to EU law. So I think it's going to be very difficult to persuade our member states, you know, that they should back us on this particular issue. But I do know that there is a sense that Ireland's farming practices are generally less intensive than other member states, that, you know, there are particular features about our farming practices that are very attractive in terms of food production and quality of food and the product that is exported. So, you know, there is a good commercial and economic case, but I don't know whether that actually stacks up in terms of our nature conservation and, you know, just protecting the environment in which we all live.
Any environmental lawyer in Ireland is keeping a very close eye on a court case that was taken by Antashka, the Irish National Trust. Can you explain what that court case is about and the implications with regards to what's happening here?
So Antashka, who in fairness have been warning about this issue, both under the Water Framework Directive, which is a different piece of legislation, and also under the Habitats Directive for quite some time, they brought a case challenging the Nitrates Action Plan to say that it was non-compliant with the Habitats Directive because it didn't ensure that individual derogations would be subject to an appropriate assessment. There hasn't been a judgment on that yet. And so really all Antashka did when they brought the High Court case was to bring to the attention of the Irish courts the fact that this issue has already been litigated in another member state and that we are still not listening and we're still not trying to comply with the law. So I think Antashka have tried to emphasise the importance of this. I don't think they're anti-farming. I think what they are is trying to ensure that there is respect for the environmental laws. Appropriate assessment isn't meant to prevent projects, prevent activities. It's just meant to ensure that we don't inadvertently allow things to happen that will cause deterioration to our rare and vulnerable species and habitats. These are the ones that are most under threat.
Can I ask your judgment as to whether really what is happening now is the beginning of the end of the derogation?
The amount of work that would be needed to prove that the derogations are not having a, you know, an adverse effect on European sites that are downstream from the farms where high concentrations of nitrates are being applied. It is a 3 to 4 year project minimum, as far as I can see, in terms of the scientific data that would be needed. So I just don't think the time is on our side.
The derogation ends this year. The department undoubtedly will be going to the Commission saying, give us a bit more time. How likely do you think, knowing the Commission and knowing what the law says, how likely is it that the Commission will say, yeah, you can have more time?
To say you can have more time to continue breaching the law is a difficult thing to get positive approval for. And I think there would probably need to be some sort of transition plan presented that is quite, I think maybe if they could present something that shows, you know, a transitional ramping down, maybe that would be acceptable. But it seems to me that unless we take action, there is a very high risk of enforcement action being taken against Ireland,
leading to public fines paid using public money.
Correct.
Alice Whittaker of Philip Lee legal firm there. There is clearly an awful lot of uncertainty and confusion, but hopefully she's shed a bit of light on it all, and my thanks to her. We extended an invitation to the Minister for Agriculture, Martin Hayden, to come in, but he wasn't available. There's text coming in. The EU policy is essentially to close down the dairy industry and turn the country into a wildlife park for tourists, text one. Our golden goose dairy industry is being slowly strangled. Young generation frightened away by all the negativity.